Hello, everybody. It's Jake Sanziano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, welcome 2024, my friend. How you doing, brother?
Always making it happen, big man. And that's right. Today, we're discussing why 2023 was one of our very best investing years, and hopefully we can give you some frameworks and tips to make you successful in the future, avoid the pitfalls that other people had over the last couple of years, and have a very strong 2024. G-Dad, how's it going?
Jake, as I reflect upon what you just said, it's an honor to me and a privilege to be sharing this with the listeners, because I had a few rough years early on in my investing career. And this was, 2007, 2008. And I made the same mistakes that these investors had made the last couple of years. I didn't have a framework. I didn't buy right. I sure as hell didn't manage right. And the finance right, I was using shorter term debt just like everyone else is doing. Everyone was so sexy with this bridge debt. We got to get deals done. Well, we didn't do any of that. And I know you're going to run through the numbers, but to me, what's more impressive than anything else about the number of units that we closed this year in 2023, I know we did 333 units in 2023. That's three deals, almost $30 million. And that's capital that we ourselves put into deals. We didn't syndicate those deals. But what's more impressive about what we did is we buckled down on the manage right. I finally realized that multifamily is an entrepreneurial adventure. It's building a business. It's just not going out there and doing deals and doing the next deal and outgrowing your infrastructure. We really tamped it down. And I got to give our property management team really huge kudos to the metrics and the KPIs that we set up. And our most popular one is PPU, profit per unit, if you know what that means. And we've been focusing on that. And whatever you focus on, it ends up growing. And that's a couple of the reasons why we were successful in 2023. And we're going to go through this podcast and tell you what we expect in 2024 and what you can do to not eliminate the risk, because there's always going to be some kind of risk. Mm-hmm. But we have people out there now copying our stuff on Instagram saying, buy right and invest for the long term. That's stuff that we've been saying for years. Buy right and sit tight. Buy for the decade. Now, all of a sudden, cash ain't trash no more. Cash is golden. It's just really funny to listen to these memes and to be caught up into what's going on. If you invest for the long term and you have a framework and you follow the framework, you really take away a lot of the risk that most of these investors have come across over the last couple of years.
I'm gonna say it like this, and we've said it a million times. Every time you buy a deal, it's just like raising a kid. And too many of these, investors that we see out in the marketplace right now are doing the things like the Lakers did in the 60s and 70s, okay? They're going from town to town and they're impregnating a bunch of women and having a lot of kids, but they're not raising them. Okay. And sorry to the Lakers out there that did raise the kids that they had all over the country. But ultimately, each one of these deals, you need to take your time with it. You need to raise it properly. You need to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. Therefore, you're serving your residents properly. And also, the deal is making money, because you can't serve the residents if the deal's not making money. They go hand in hand. For the folks out there that weren't aware of that. So I think it's very key that you take your time with each one of these. It is a business. You need to make sure that, to Gino's point, you're getting that profit per unit. It's great to buy a deal, but the worst deal you're ever going to do is the deal that doesn't work. And I think that's what the story of 2020 to 2022 was. So let's lay the groundwork for 2020 to 2022. 2020, obviously everyone knows, COVID hit. The world was going to end. No one was going to be renting apartments anymore. Apartment industry was going to crash, yada, yada, yada. It was the end of days. That was the story. At least that's the way I was reading, the articles out there. But that didn't happen, did it, Gino? Rents started to rise. Mm-hmm. Value started to go up. People were, cautious and kind of saying, hey, something seems to be actually working out here. So ultimately, rents started going up. Demand for apartments started going up. People weren't moving as much, unless they were migrating to a different area. So 2020 was sort of this weird year, but you saw value start to increase. A lot of people were hesitant. It continued into 2021. Low interest rate environment. People were still buying with agency debt in 2021, but the market really caught fire. And we were saying the market was at a high in 2018. You look back 2021, 2022, that was probably the real high, but you're seeing rents go through the roof. all of a sudden the demand for apartments is at an all-time high. Price per door is going nuts. People are still buying some with agency debt because you're seeing 3.5% rate, but they're having to bring more to the table. What I mean by that is they're having to bring more down payment. So it's starting to get a little bit more challenging because they're having to raise more money for these deals to get agency debt. Now you see the emergency of bridge coming into this scenario. 2021, you're seeing more people buying on bridge debt simply because they can bring less money to the table. They're underwriting year over year 20% rent growth, and the market's starting to get frothy. I would say about halfway through 2021, we're feeling uneasy with it. 2022, what are we seeing, Gino? Everybody's doing bridge debt. And when we say bridge debt, we mean floating rate debt. Some people are buying these rate caps, but ultimately they're not going to be enough to save them. That's what we find out, you know, going into 2023. So this is really 2022 is the height. It's the time where people are overpaying left and right. They think it's never going to end. And this was really, to me, the peak of the cycle. Do you agree with that?
I do. And let me just step back to 2021. This is a history lesson for everybody. And I learned this lesson back in 08 and 09. Once you see debt starting to pull back, once you see that the debt is starting to get cautious, you know that you're starting to get to a high. The only difference with this part of the market cycle was there was so much capital pumped into the system that people were able to raise tons of capital. But if this is a normal market cycle and you've got to come up with, you know, 65 LTV or 60
LTV. Irrational exuberance.
Exactly. Yeah. These deals would not work. And then when you start seeing instruments like bridge financing, short-term instruments come into play, then you can start saying to yourself, wow, there's a little bit going on here. We're getting to the height of the seller's market. And in second quarter of 2022, value has been down 13.4% as for what Freddie Mac's, you know, report came out a couple weeks ago. So we know we're at the high, we've passed the high. But just to give you some frame of reference going forward, when you see this in the next market cycle, you're going to go back to Jake and Gino and go, oh, I remember Gino saying debt's going to be a problem. It's hard to finance these deals. You can use seller financing, and we've used seller financing this last year because debt's really gotten really challenging in a lot of these deals. But at the same time, debt's the circulatory engine of the economy. And once it starts pulling back, that's when you know that a correction is coming inevitably.
Gino, I'm going to challenge you on that.
Whew. I love when you challenge me, brother.
I don't think, and because here's the, if we're discussing debt in the multifamily space, I think the, I don't know, pinnacle or highest and best, whatever you want to say, is Fannie and Freddie, right? That is, let's be honest, everyone views Fannie and Freddie debt as the best. I don't think Fannie and Freddie pulled back. I think they remained disciplined. I think all they said was, our parameters are not changing, but if you're going to do a deal with this, you need to bring 40 or 50% to make the deal work. So what I think happened was people got silly. They started overpaying for deals because they thought there was going to be this run-up that was never going to end. Remember what I said? People were underwriting for 20% year-over-year rent growth. Gang, it happened in a year or two, but you can't expect that to go on forever. That's idiotic. Okay, that's insane. Debt remained disciplined. The investors did not remain disciplined, and that's what we saw. And so they said, oh, it's going to be okay. I'm going to go get bridge debt at 80% LTV, and I'm not going to get a rate cap, or I'm going to get a rate cap for 2 years and it's going to expire and I'm going to get burned. But there's more, okay? There's more that came after that. So what else
happened? I need to challenge you on that.
Hit it.
Because Fannie and Freddie also came out and said, we're going to make it a little bit more difficult. We want you to have experience on these deals. And oh, by the way, you're going to come up with...
Dude, you should have experience. Don't you think if you have, you should have some experience getting a $10, $20 million loan?
But what I'm saying, Freddie, in the beginning, that SBL, they're like, oh, you know what? First timers, you know, come on in.
They were a little loosey. They opened it up a little bit for first timers a little bit. Yeah.
That's my point. That's so fair. They pulled that back.
But traditional, Fannie and Freddie still, I think, remained pretty disciplined.
Don't they want more reserves? They're coming in and going to these properties that are worth in the 60s and 70s going, time out. We need to have some reserves here because you take this property over, we need to have more money in CapEx for roofs. And when it's high flying back in 2020, nobody's looking at that 2020, 2021. And now all of a sudden, everyone's going with a fine tooth comb on these properties. Well, you need to have money for roofs. You need to have money for driveways. So there's different ways that debt can pull itself back. And going from an 80 LTV to a 60 or 65 LTV is a really nice way.
But they didn't change, though. The price per unit changed and the income didn't change. So you had a similar income, or even if it went up, but still they're going to have their DSCR, you know, requirements. And that's what was failing. Mm-hmm. So you know, that's ultimately. But here's some things that that we got to take a look at here. So, you know, we're talking about ultimately what changed and where people got burned. And so 2023 was sort of this snowball effect. And what you saw, rates all of a sudden jumped, okay? Taxes started jumping on the people that bought new deals, okay? Because think about it, you know, every county is different. But the interest rates start to fly through the roof. Taxes all of a sudden jump. Insurance jump because you had these different things along the coast and whatnot. So what do you do? All right.
Payroll jumped.
Payroll jumped. Inflation was raging. Your rents may be going up, but a lot of folks did not factor in rates going through the roof. And that did affect the bridge debt because ultimately their rates, the rate caps expired if they had them, and all of a sudden they're having to pay, you know, 20 times what they originally did. Taxes jumped, insurance jumped, and these people are saying, I underwrote for 20% year-over-year growth, but I only got 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're caught. Okay. And now they're turning the keys back in. So we're gonna say, what did we do differently? I'm gonna run through now our 2020 to 2023 purchases so you can actually see what discipline looks like and why 2023 ended up being one of our best years. So I know this is long-winded. Stay with us because we're trying to make a point here. 2020, we were cautiously optimistic, but a little freaked out. I mean, to be fair, we didn't know what the hell was going to happen. So in 2020, what did we do? We bought two deals, 102 units. One was 30K a door, one was 80K a door. Total of 102 units. We bought small. We bought fixed rate debt. Okay. They were with community banks, but ultimately we had fixed rate debt for 5 years. And we ultimately refied those within 12 months to agency. So typical plan, what we do. Nothing sexy there, but we remained disciplined, didn't overpay, didn't buy a lot. That was actually a low volume year, 102 units. We like to do 200 to 300 units a year. Okay. 2021, literally the same story. Two deals, 110 units, all priced below 100K a door. Nothing sexy, discipline, fixed rate debt. Snoozer. That's what you want, though. This is, we're snoozing on multifamily, but that's what you want. 2022. Okay, here we go. We even downshifted more. Four deals, 91 units, and 150 acres of raw land. Land was bought with cash. Those four deals, five-year fixed rate debt, okay? 3% rates on those things.
Home run deals, sexy. By the way.
Home run deals. You know, somewhere slightly above 100K. I think, you know, the blended average is probably around 100K a door on those. All cash flowed, okay, you know, throughout the term once they're repositioned. So that's about 300 units over 3 years, which we typically would do in a year, okay? Now we're in 2023. Rates jump, okay? Taxes, all this stuff's jumping. Owners are getting freaked out. So what do? We've been waiting for our pitch. Cautious, cautious, cautious. 2023 hits, boom. We knock out 333 units over three deals, okay? We did 303 the three prior years. But Jake, taxes jumped, rates jumped, insurance jumped. Yeah, but guess what? Those three deals we did, again, sub 100K per door, on actuals post-renovation, we're crushing it, okay? So we factored in the taxes, factored in the insurance, and we, look, 6% debt is working on these deals. So we basically waited for our pitch, and I'm hoping that going into, you know, this year, which is 2024, maybe I can sniff some 4% debt out there, because already you got the 10-year around 3. If we do 150 basis points over that, 10 years at 4, we're at 5.5. It ticks down a little bit. We're in the 4s. I'm refining these deals. So what did we do different? We didn't overextend. We waited for our pitch. And we locked in fixed rate debt, okay? We negotiated also great interest insurance. We did not get creamed because we invest in Tennessee, so we didn't have the coastal, you know, jump that we saw in insurance. So we did really good on insurance. And we underwrote for taxes. We made sure that the increases were going to be there and that our deals could cash flow based on the actuals with reasonable, you know, rent growth, not this 20% year-over-year growth. So basically, if you read our first book, it's up there. It's the white one, Wheelbarrow Profits. We remain disciplined in our buying, okay? We bought right. We've continued to manage right. We have, you know, our own in-house management. We've really hammered that over the years in you know, creating this Chick-fil-A type service. And we've always got fixed rate financing. I think that is probably one of the biggest takeaways, but not overextending ourselves, Not saying that I got to go buy, you know, six deals a year, regardless of the market cycle. We waited for the market cycle to turn and then we pounced. We waited for our pitch. I think that's why we saw, and in terms of our organization, we had one of the, if not the best year in 2023, not only from an investment perspective, but a performance perspective from our teams.
Jake, I'm going to run through these eight things that people need to do. Let me run through them pretty quick, but I want to make a point on everything that you've said. The first thing that you need to do for 2024, follow the framework. Don't overpay for a deal. Buy on actuals. Buy on your pro forma. The second thing is partner up with other people to take down deals. Now's the time to find other people out there that you can partner with to start taking down deals. Number three, this is the time to start sourcing investors. They're freaked out. Learn your pitch, create your brand, understand what your business model is, and start talking to investors. Because when the deal comes, at least you have investors to go to. The fourth one, find new sources of funding. There's so many different sources of funding out there. Go find mortgage brokers. Go find credit unions. Talk to other community banks and other regional lenders out there. And that's what we did. We went and slid to the credit union side, and they've been amazing for us. The last deal we did with the credit union, their terms have been phenomenal. Number five, approach credit unions and community banks for deals on their books. A lot of these community banks and credit unions are stopping to underwrite deals because they've got deals in their portfolio that are having issues. So they may have to sell these or may have to find people to sell this. So look and see and create those relationships and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Community Bank, I'm an investor. Do you have any deals in your portfolio that you look like they're a little, you know, sketchy? Anything you're selling, you can get deals through community banks and credit unions. Number six, create your buy right criteria. What are you buying? Let's focus in on buy right right now. Like Jake said, we pivoted. We even bought two pieces of raw land to build to rent because we had time. We said, you know what? This is our model. Let's buy this land. We'll land bank it as it, you know, appreciates in value. We have the ability to either sell it or we can develop it when rates go down. These smaller deals, they're wonderful because they're great vintages, great years, great areas. We were able to bundle them with our larger properties, and that's was a continuation of what our buy right criteria is. So for you listening out there, your buy right criteria is basically what are you buying? Age, vintage, location, unit mix, amenities. What are the assets that you're focusing on? Number seven, finance right. You need to finance right. You need to say to yourself, if I'm going to do bridge debt, I'm going to have to expect to pay a lot more because it's more expensive on the front end. The fees are really
I don't like it personally, Gino. I'm not a fan.
I'm agreeing with you, but I'm saying if you find this deal and it's not stabilized and you're saying to yourself, I can turn this, and you know you can do. See, the problem was in 2021.
I would rather go community or regional bank on something like that.
I would also, but if you're syndicating and you can't, I'm trying to give you the option. But the only reason you do this – yeah, the only reason you do this is if you know you have the labor, you have the materials, you have the speed to get the job done in that time frame. And if you're saying to yourself, I'm taking a risk, I really honestly would pass on that deal because there's too much risk.
And you have a reasonable reposition strategy. You're not shooting for the moon, right?
Exactly.
There's a lot of risk.
You have an actual exit strategy. Okay, another thing to do, your exit strategy. What is your exit strategy on these deals? Because once you buy these deals, you're either refinancing the deals, pulling money out, or you're selling the deals. Understand what that looks like. And I think for me, the last thing I would say is don't outgrow your infrastructure. That's where we see investors make mistakes. Jake and I, in 2015, it was a seminal moment for us. We were at 600 units and we were teetering on, okay, what do we do now? We actually said to ourselves, we need to learn how to scale up a portfolio. We didn't have systems. We didn't have AppFolio. We didn't have a cadence of accountability. Don't continue to buy deals and outgrow your infrastructure. I mean, I'm going to mention Chick-fil-A on this podcast again, but Chick-fil-A's been around for how many years? 40 years? They were first an Atlanta-based company. Then they went from region to region and then from region to nationwide. It took them years and decades to do that.
That's what people are missing.
But they've maintained the quality. They've maintained the culture. And each store, when they do $20,000 a day in business, and it's so profitable, and they have thousands of people vying for one store, it's taken them a lot longer, but they've built a true business. And in multifamily, it doesn't need, you don't need 30 years to build a really amazing portfolio. If you give yourself a few years to start buying deals and then start exiting deals and then start turning over your portfolio, start refinancing them, within 5 years, you can have several hundred units. And the myth of having to buy thousands of units and do tons of deals, if you can focus on a good quality in the beginning, 50 to 100 units to get yourself going, to get yourself in the business, but you have to learn how to buy, manage, and finance.
Bingo.
And at Jake and Gino, we do that. So go to jakeandgino.com/webinar. Just sign up for our monthly webinars. We talk about this strategy, the framework of how our students, you know, over 75,000 units, they've raised over $400 million. So if you want to go out and buy thousands of units, you can, but you just don't have to. You don't have to fall into the myth of 10Xing it and saying, I want 500 units in the next 2 years. Pull yourself back and say, why do I want that? Is it a meme that I've heard? Because Jake and Gino, buying 100 units a year for the last 3 years has done, we've done pretty well doing those deals. You will set yourself free by doing 100 units, because 100 units at a $250 profit per unit is $25,000 a year. You do that 2 or 3 years in a row, all of a sudden your assets start stacking up, you're taking less risk, and you are building a viable, amazing, scalable business.
Think about that. So what Gino just said, if you do 100 units a year at $250 profit per unit, what's the cash flow on that, Gino?
It's 25 G's a month, right?
So what's that, 300?
Yep.
So 300 G's a year, right there.
Think about that.
But now you did that 3 years in a row.
Yeah, and then
that's 900 grand in cash flow.
And you're missing the best part. What about the cost seg, the tax savings? What about the ability to refi that money out and put it into the next deal if you buy them right? Because that's what we've been able to do to our portfolio. We've been able to refinance over $30 million from our portfolio to be able to find for the next deal. And it all started with a crappy little 25-unit crack-den property back in 2013. And we've been able to get it going on. And we've been able to stay focused on the buy right, the manage right, and the finance right. And our buy right criteria has evolved over time. We would not buy that deal we bought back in 2013 today unless it was an amazing price, but it's going to evolve over time. Give yourself some time. I mean, I'll end with this, Jake. When we started back in 2011, I always equate it to going to college. It took us 18 months to find our very first deal in 2013. So we would probably be sophomores in college, but we had 25 units. By the end of sophomore year, we had another deal. We had 60 units within 2 years. Beginning of year three.
Such a reasonable pace, the way you're describing this.
It really is. By year three, by the beginning of year three, we had closed on another 136 units. We were at 200 units the beginning of our junior year. By the end of college, by the end of 4 years, we're almost at 500 units. Think about that. Within 0 to 500 units in a four-year time frame. And that's methodical, that's slow, that's de-risking it, that's building a business. And that's when you stop and say, man, 4 years is a long time. Well, your kids go to college for 4 years and they get out and they get a college degree and they get a job for 40 grand a year if they're lucky. If you start this business in 2028, you're going to have 500 units cash flowing $250 a door. That's $1 million a year in cash flow. Think about that. I mean, who would not say yes to that?
ROI than a college education, let me tell you.
I would say so. And there's no indoctrination, there's no student debt, and you're working for yourself, my friend.
Well, there's an indoctrination and to figure shit out. I'll tell you that much. So the point that I think we got to really drill home here is that we really believe it only takes one really good deal to get your snowball rolling. And so the key here is to wait for that pitch, wait for that good deal, but then pounce on it. If you get that first deal and you can make it work, the snowball, to Gino's point, will start growing. And I truly believe this. And this is the framework we've been following since we started. Buy right, manage right, and finance right. I'm going to say it again. What do we mean by that? Having a clear buying criteria that works. What kind of units are you looking for? Okay. What kind of cash on cash return are you looking for? These are the things that matter, what the vintage is, et cetera. I'm not going to go through all this because we've done multiple podcasts. You can go back and listen to those, but having that clear buying criteria, having a clear management criteria, systems, key performance indicators, cadence of accountability. Again, we've done multiple podcasts on those. Go back and listen to them. And then finance right. make sure you're getting long-term fixed rate debt. I mean, if we're going to say, there's much more to it than that, but if I can say one thing, I truly believe in long-term fixed rate debt because you're removing the interest rate risk off the table, okay? And then you can stagger it. That one good deal is so important. And what that will help you do is to avoid the get-there-itis. This is one thing we didn't touch on today. We did a little bit. Careful of protecting this, and that's for the folks on YouTube, and I'm pointing to my brain. Protect your mind, because you can get on Instagram, you can get on these stupid social media sites, and yes, maybe I sound old and stodgy, you don't really love them, and get caught up with Joe Blow just did 1,000 units this year. What's wrong with me? Well, Joe Blow is probably busting out if he did those units in 2021 and 2022. So be careful, okay? You need the long-term fixed rate debt. You can't have the get-there-itis. Do damn good deals and you know, make sure that you're cautious and patient with them, because if you're worried about what the other guy's doing and not focused on yourself, you're going to get burned. So I think be patient. Wait for the good deals. They will stack over time. And, you know, this is why we always sign off with this, Gino, and that's we believe in buying deals for the long term, and we think in decades. If you buy right, manage right, and finance right, and you plan and work towards the long term, in our experience, this is the best business that's out there. Final thought.
There's a little white book above your shoulder right there. If you want a copy of Wheelbarrow Profits, email me, Gino@jakeandgino.com. Learn the framework. I mean, take that first step on building a real business. And if you want more information, go to jakeandgino.com. Apply for mentorship. Apply to work with the team. I mean, if you're struggling, you've got a few units and you want to scale up to manage right, that's one of our main selling points is we've helped students scale their portfolios. We have all the systems in place, and are we getting better every day? We're learning every day how to become really great at managing these properties. So just go to jakeandgino.com, apply to work with us.
Yep. And gang, look, like Gino said, it's been, I don't know, 13 years, whatever, you know, Gino and I have been working together in this business, over 2,200 units the two of us have acquired and $350 million in you know, assets that we currently hold. We give back, you know, on this stuff. This is what we do day in and day out. This is our full-time business. You know, we've seen a lot and we've learned a lot and we've learned a lot from this community. So hope to see at one of our next events there. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Jake.